My name is Todd Carpenter. I'm the manager of social media for the National Association of Realtors, and I want to welcome you to Mardi Gras. I'm really excited about this particular session and our speaker, Ginger Wilcox, who is, like myself, a real estate brat. Who here is the daughter or son of a real estate agent? Yeah, we're a band of brothers. I always think so. Anyway, Ginger is a third-generation real estate agent. She started in 1989. She's a broker and has a team in the San Francisco Bay Area. It's the SF North team. You can go to sfnorth.com or blogbythebay.com and see her website. She started blogging in about 2007, which, let me tell you, in 2007, there weren't a lot of people that were blogging. I know, because I was one of the few, and we all became kind of a network of people trying to experiment and figure all this social media stuff out. Ginger went on to start to help found the Social Media Marketing Institute, which is a training group for social media, and they do specialize in real estate, but they do other different venues and industries as well. And they are teamed with SMMI this summer to help rewrite the ePro course, which launched yesterday. ePro, for a long time, had been based on training that was established over a decade ago, and we felt like we wanted to completely rewrite it and start completely over, and their team is largely responsible for putting that program together. So I am very happy to have Ginger Wilcox here. Please welcome her.
Little bit louder. Good morning.
Good morning.
Yes. I think we'll be seeing a lot of people coming in as we as they trickle through the registration lines and as they wake up a little bit. Have you all been enjoying New Orleans? Yeah? Having good food? Beignets? Yeah, Cafe du Monde? Wonderful. I'm glad you're having a great time. This is such a beautiful city, and we're so lucky to be here. And I really hope you do enjoy yourself, because we've had a couple of really rough years. Would you agree? Our industry has definitely been challenged over the last few years. Unfortunately, we've seen somewhat of a financial meltdown. We've seen foreclosures. And for most agents that I know, our business has been a lot harder. Everything seems to take longer, don't you think? Yep, all of our transactions seem to take longer. Our clients, I'm finding, are much, much more emotional than they've been before, because there's so much stress involved with a lot of these transactions. And so there's starting to see an awful lot of change in our industry. We've seen a lot of agents leave the industry. So I applaud you guys for all being here and working on your business, because that's awesome. I've been in the real estate industry, as Todd said, for a very long time. My first job in a real estate office was in 1989. I was in high school still, so I'm not that old. It was in 1989, and I was a receptionist at my mom's office on the weekend. And when I worked there, there was no computers in the office on the weekend. I got all my homework done, which was fantastic. But I actually started at a much younger age, when I looked a little bit like this. My mom recruited me when I was about 6 years old. I got paid a penny a piece to fold her flyers and walk around the neighborhoods with her. And I think that she may have taken advantage of my ponytails and my dimples to be able to get attention in her farm neighborhood. My grandfather was a real estate broker. He passed away about 3 years ago, but he was a real estate broker for over 50 years. And he built subdivisions and homes, and I like to say he sold anything he could sell. He'd sell RVs, he'd sell apartment buildings, whatever it is, you name it, he could sell it. I learned so much from my grandfather over the years. And during the process, got to see a lot of change. I like to joke that my first booster seat was a stack of MLS books in my mom's Monte Carlo. Does anybody remember the MLS books? Yeah? Remember when you had to wait for like 2 weeks to get your listings published? Can you imagine now waiting like 10 minutes? Right? It's a huge, huge change that we have. Does anybody in here still have any copies of those old MLS books in your garage? You guys do? What? Those of you who are raising your hands, I've been dying to get a picture of a stack of them. So if you give me your cards afterwards, maybe you could email me a picture. I would love you forever, because amazingly enough, there's a lot of agents in our industry who I can see some of the faces going, what are you talking about? One afternoon I went into my office, and the weekend receptionist at my office was sitting there, and he happened to be the son of an agent, because we're sort of that type of business where we seem to hire our family members. And I'm talking to him. He's bored to tears in the office on the weekend. And I said, Matt, I used to do your job, and I remember how boring it was. But when I used to do this, guess what? There were no computers in the office. And he looked at me, and he was absolutely horrified, because he can't imagine a time in his life that there wasn't a computer. So our business has really dramatically changed. Our first cell phones, come on, guys. Our first cell phones actually look like this. Can you imagine? It's like carrying around this huge suitcase. You put it in your car. The great thing about it is they had tremendous battery life. And then we had an improvement, and the improvement actually looked like this. The brick. Remember the brick? $4,000 for the brick. 2.5 pounds. That is a huge phone. Can you imagine carrying a 2.5 pound phone now? When I got my iPhone 4, I complained because it was bigger than the other one. Right? And to pay $4,000 for a phone, we think, well, if it's not free with our plan, like, right? Right? The great thing about these phones, there was an agent in my office who, she's very quirky. She was always losing things. She was losing her eyeglasses on the top of her head, her keys. Every single time she'd leave her keys at the front desk, and I knew she'd be coming back in for them because she always forgot them. But she also forgot and would leave her phone on the top of her car. She ran over that phone multiple times, and it still worked. It was amazing. I wish you could do that with the iPhone. When I was in college, this was the tool of choice. We switched to two-way paging. I work for a RE/MAX office, and I did the phones in the afternoon while I went to school in the morning. And there are 86 agents in that office, and all of the phone calls were routed through the front desk. Can you imagine that now? We all get all of our own phone calls, right? All of the phone calls went through the front desk, and I had to type out individual messages to all 86 agents. It was a very busy office, and I learned how to type very, very fast. So our technology has changed a lot in not that long of a time. And now we have phones. Well, actually, we got a lot better phone than that now, thankfully. That's the old Trio. But our phones have been changing, and in this period of time, we've gotten computers and laptops, and we've gotten email, and we have all this technology. And the great thing about all this technology is we no longer have to be stuck in our office to do something, right? So I can be in Louisiana and have a transaction in California and be dealing with my clients, and they don't even have to know I'm here, except for they see what I'm saying on social networks, so they hear about it. But I'm able to handle things from remotely. So technology has really been able to connect us. Distance is no longer an issue, and that's a really good thing. But what has happened with this technological shift that we've had is we've also had a major shift in communications and how we communicate with people, right? And a lot of people, as they think about social media, they think it's about technology. Many people are afraid to participate with social networking because they're afraid of the technology. But really what it's about is the communication. Technology has fueled massive changes in how we communicate. And the biggest change came about with social networking. Anybody heard of a little social network called Facebook?
Yes.
Facebook was not the first social network, but it is by far the most game-changing thing that we've had in many, many years. Over 500 million users on Facebook. There are estimates that number is actually going to be over 1 billion by the end of the year. I don't know if it'll hit by the end of the year, but not unfathomable to see that in the first quarter of next year by any means. And interestingly enough, 1/2 of all Facebook users log on every single day. That is significant. 48% of the US population over the age of 12 has a profile on a social network. This number is actually from a few months ago, and it's probably significantly higher because the adoption rate right now is skyrocketing. It's through the roof. And for the last year or so, I've been hearing from agents, well, that's not my demographic. That's for the young people. The fastest growing demographic is 65 plus. Second fastest growing demographic is 55 plus. And the reason why this is changing is because it's not about technology, it's about communication. And the older generations are realizing that if they want to keep up and communicate with the people in their family, the members in their family, their kids and their grandkids, where do they need to be? Facebook, right? How many of you have grandkids in here? Quite a few of you. So that's great. Fantastic. So we're seeing a group
of people that are adopting these technologies because we know that that's where the communications are. My mom is an agent in Santa Cruz County, California. I talk to her every day, and we're very close. And I said, Mom, I'm going to be super busy this week. I'm not going to have time to talk to you. And she said, that's okay, Ginger. I'll follow you on Facebook. And that's what's happening. It's changing how we see things. Social networking has become a habit for people. 30% of people on social networks check them more than once a day. So what's happening is in the morning we're waking up and we're looking at our phone. We check Facebook before we even get out of bed in many instances. And people are checking Facebook at lunchtime and on their breaks. And actually during the day they're sneaking a look. It's become a habit that we have to check it as often, if not more often, than our email. And for many people, it's actually the last thing they do before they go to bed. It's the last thing they see is their Facebook. It's pretty amazing to see this change that we're having, right? And it continues, the adoption continues to increase. Americans spent 41.1 million minutes on Facebook in August 2010. The interesting number is that it's more than Google. This is a huge shift in our society, because what's happening now is instead of people going on the internet to search for information from Google, they're going on the internet to communicate with their friends and to get information from their friends about the things that they should be paying attention to. We call it social search. And social search has become such an important part that now Google has actually implemented social search into your home page or your page on Google. So if you do a search for real estate in Marin, for example, where I am, even if I'm on page 47,000, but I'm in your network, I'm still going to show up on page one. That's a huge change in how we look and get information. Because what's happening is people are looking for information from people they trust, people within their social network. And so all of this is impacting how we get information, and it's impacting those numbers. Now if we need to get a review, we want to go to a new hairdresser, or we want to know what camera we should buy, we don't necessarily go out and look for the research. We type it into Facebook, or we post something on Twitter. I needed to buy a new camera recently. I don't care what the review said. I wanted to know what my friends who use their camera on a regular basis do. So I posted it on Twitter, and I got 5 results back. I reviewed those, and I bought one of them. So it's impacting how we spend our money. This is a very significant change in how we use tools. Number one reason consumers hire their realtor. Trust. This isn't something that's earth-shattering or groundbreaking or new. This has always been the case, right? This is according to the 2009 Home Buyer and Seller Survey from the National Association of Realtors. But what's happening is that the medium or the channel for developing that trust has changed pretty dramatically. So by the end of this session, my goal is to show you how you can use online technology to increase trust so that you have the more opportunity for clients to hire you, because the number one reason they hire their realtor is trust. Does that sound good? Because at the end of the day, we want more money in our pockets, right? Can you all use more money? Yeah?
Yes.
No? Thank you. Come on. If there's anybody in here who doesn't need more money, even if you want to give it all away, come on. So trust has always been a cornerstone of successful businesses. Long, long before we had any sort of technology, it was the key. Because at one time, word-of-mouth marketing was all we had, right? Before we had mass media, it was one-on-one or one to a small group, and that was the only way that we could communicate information. It was incredibly powerful. But then over time, we started to get broadcast media. And that dramatically changed how marketing messages were distributed, because suddenly, instead of this one-to-one or one to our small group, we have the ability as marketers to be able to broadcast our messages to large groups of people, which is much more efficient. But it worked, because our TVs look like this. Does anybody remember that kind of TV? Does anybody still have that TV? Should be in a museum, right? So at this point in time, when these marketing messages were coming to us, there might have been one or two or five channels But we didn't even have remotes. So if we didn't like the marketing message, we actually had to get up off our bums and change the channel. Can you imagine that now? No. I mean, with my remote control, I mute everything I can, or we use DVR so we can fast forward through it, right? So the marketing messages that were coming at us at this point in time, we listened to, we paid attention to, same thing with the radio. But then we have the advent of remote control. And then we get cable, satellite radio. We have internet. And now we have all of these different places. And marketers go, I have to compete with all these different places where our attention is divided. Because our attention is spread across so many places. So what happens is the marketers dramatically increase the number of messages that they're going to be sending out to us. And suddenly, it starts to feel like this. We have marketing messages coming at us all the time, and sometimes we don't even realize that they're coming at us because they're everywhere we go. I had somebody ask me recently what I thought of their change in their website because they had recently gone from no ads to having ads on their site. I didn't even notice because we've become so attuned to ignoring them. How many people here are on the do not call list? Almost everybody. Is there anybody in here whoever does not answer their front door because they don't want to be sold something? You guys are very nice. I never open my front door for people. We want to avoid these messages, and we become very good at it. Both unconsciously and consciously, we avoid the messages. So this sort of creates a challenge for us because we're salespeople and we're marketers. We have to market our listings, and we have to market ourselves in order to get more business. So how do we do that in a way, knowing that we have a tendency as individuals in our personal lives to avoid all these messages? And that's what's called permission-based marketing. This term was coined by Seth Godin, who's a very well-known author, and he describes it in this way. Permission marketing is the privilege, not the right, of delivering anticipated, personal, and relevant messages to people who actually want to get them. It recognizes the new power of the best consumers to ignore marketing. It realizes that treating people with respect is the best way to get their attention. So this is a big change. Some of you may be thinking, well, I already do that. When somebody gives me their email address, they've given it to me, so I'm going to throw them on my email newsletter list. This is not true permission-based marketing unless the person who gave you their email knows that you're going to put them on your email newsletter that's going to be sent out, and they're going to receive these marketing messages in their email. That would be true permission-based marketing. So if I collected all your cards today and suddenly threw you on my email newsletter list, a lot of you go, I don't really want to see those messages, right? True permission-based marketing means people know that you're going to be sending them messages, and they agree to it. And this works because while we don't want to be sold, we try to avoid being sold, we actually want to buy, and we have certain needs. This week I got quite a few emails from vendors who are going to be here at the trade show, and they all had sort of the same tone. And what it was, hi Ginger, I see you're speaking at the convention. Come check me out. And my first thought is, oh, why? And guess what? They probably have products that I might even be interested in that might help my clients, but because of how they approached it, I don't really even want to pay attention because it's about them and I haven't given them permission to treat me in that manner, right? When we like a business on Facebook, we are giving them permission to market us, and it comes into our stream. For those of you who are on Facebook, you know, if you like a business page, we are giving them permission. Now, if somebody changes how they're providing you information, you may decide that you no longer want to give them permission, and you opt out by unliking the page, and that's acceptable. That's permission-based marketing. So how does this really work? Well, I like to akin it to dating, which is, some of you are going, what is she talking about? But building an online influence, permission-based marketing, and dating all have some very similar traits in common. So I'm going to give you a scenario, and I think a lot of you can probably relate to this. I'm going out, and I'm from San Francisco, so if you hear a few things during my presentation about the San Francisco Giants, I'm very, very excited that they won the World Series last week. My partners in the Social Media Marketing Institute are from Philadelphia. And they did a lot of gloating when the Phillies beat the Giants in San Francisco, and I was very pleased when we were able to kick them out, and then go on to beat the Rangers. But in my scenario, say I'm walking into a bar, and the first thing that I do when I walk in, it's a noisy bar, busy, and somebody says, "Hey, baby, you looking for a date?" My immediate reaction is going to be like, "No, leave me alone. I'm walking on by, right?" Absolutely not. So I continue on. I go. I'm waiting for my girlfriend to show up. I sit down at the bar. I have at the bar stool, and I'm watching the game. And somebody next to me strikes up a conversation. They say, "Oh, you like the Giants?" "Yeah, I love the Giants. We're talking about baseball." We find out that we're both from the same college. We have things in common. We strike up this conversation, and it becomes interesting. And so we're building rapport with each other over things that we have in common. And then my girlfriend shows up, and we're ready to go do our thing. And he says, "Hey, you know, I really enjoyed my conversation with you. I'd love to talk to you more about blah. May I have your phone number?" Now, if I was single, I might be interested in giving my phone number to them because we developed rapport. And this works very much the same way when we think about how we participate on social networks. Because if you go out and immediately say, "Hey, baby, you looking for a date?" or "Hey, baby, do you want to buy or sell a house?" people's instant reaction is not going to be so good. Now, imagine that you're a home buyer. Homeowner, and you're just found out that your significant other is being relocated. And so you go on Facebook, because we all chronicle our lives now, go on Facebook, go on Twitter, and you say, "Hey, friends, I'm being relocated, I'm going to have to move to blah." And instantaneously you get a message from an agent, and it says this: "Hi, I'm the number one agent in Spam County, call me at 867-5309. I knew somebody would get that back there. 80s, yeah. So your instant reaction is, "I don't know who this person is. Why are they contacting me?" Sure, I might actually have a need for what they're going to do, but because of how they approach me, I've not given them permission to talk to me in that way, and I don't want to. And so that's our reaction. This is what we do. Right? That's the feeling. It's like, ew. Very much like dating. If you get approached in the wrong way, even if you have a need, it provides a turnoff. So, success in online forums is not going to take place overnight. There's all of these different companies out there that are promising these get-rich-quick schemes. Is there anything in our business that's actually really easy? No. It takes a ton of work to be a real estate agent. That's why so many agents have left the business recently, because they got in the boom and they've realized that, wow, our jobs take a lot of work, right? Those of you who are still here know this. It's not easy. And it's the same way when you participate online. It's not a get-rich-quick thing. So if you think about this in terms of dating, how many people in here are either married or have ever been married? Okay, quite a few of you. Wait, keep your hands up real quick. Of those of you who have been married or are married, how many of you got married without ever having one single date? There's always one. No. Wow. All right. See, because it doesn't work that way. Because if we're going to develop a long-term relationship with somebody, it takes time. It's developing a trusted relationship with them. It's date, learn more about them. What do we have in common? What do we like? What do we dislike? Eventually, we meet the parents. We get engaged. We get married. And it's very much the same way in online forums. Permission-based marketing is just like dating. It turns strangers into friends and friends into lifetime customers. Many of the rules of dating apply, and so do many of the benefits. When we think about this, sometimes we think, God, you know, how does this really work? But it works very much the same way it does in our offline relationships. We build trusted relationships with clients all day long, all the time. You may meet somebody at an event, charitable event, whatever it may be, and it may take them 2 years before they call you to buy or sell a house, right? But during that period of time, we're creating a trusted relationship. And online forums work very much the same way. So if you think that you can go out there and be on Twitter, post two updates or two updates on Facebook, and then suddenly you've got this successful business practice with all these leads coming in, you're going to be disappointed. You're setting yourself up for disappointment. You may get lucky, like some people do, but that's probably unlikely. So permission-based marketing is about turning strangers into friends. This is an important change for us, because when we first got involved with technology, it actually isolated us. We had all of these different tools in our tool belt, and we no longer had to be face-to-face, because I no longer had to go sit next to you in the office to sign our documents or to do different things, because we have email. How often do we see emails that probably should have been conversations that we had either on the phone or face-to-face? And it created this isolating factor. And any of you who have ever worked at home for any extended period of time know this. You could be in your pajamas all day and never see another person, right? You're getting things done. You're being productive. And so for a period of time, we had this technology that isolated us. But with the advent of social networking, suddenly we have the situation where technology can actually connect us together. And we realize that that is incredibly powerful because we no longer have to, we can be separate, but we're not alone. So if we think about why are the older generations adopting social media? Because we could be separate and not alone. Nobody wants to be alone. We want to be able to connect with our peers. We want to be able to connect with like-minded people. And that is why technology and social networking has been so widely adopted, because we can be anywhere and still be connected. Many years ago, if we had friends and they moved away to a different state, we'd have to send them letters, or it was expensive to place long-distance phone calls. And now we don't have to worry about that because we can have a Skype video chat. My best friends live across the country from me now. My business partner in the Social Media Marketing Institute lives in Philadelphia, and I live in San Francisco. We talk every day. We talk via Skype. Skype is a chat tool that enables you to do video and text messaging and different things. It's great for communicating with clients and with business partners. So now, if we don't know how to do something, we can ask our social networks. We can Google it. And we all are becoming content providers in these online spaces. And the interesting thing about it is, as we talk in online spaces, people are actually paying attention, which is kind of exciting. If somebody comments on your photo on Facebook, we like that, right? It makes us feel good. It makes us feel really good. So there's all of these communities that are starting to be formed from people that are like-minded online. And this is very significant because these small communities have tremendous power. So they're about like-minded individuals who are coming together because the technology is connecting us, and we don't have to worry about the barriers of physical location. And this is substantial. So the question is, as real estate professionals, how do we reach into these communities to unleash the power? Right? Very important, because we've got all these different places that we could be participating in. So we have to think about this in terms of the terms we already understand. So I'm very, very active in my community. I love volunteering in the community. I'm a member of the San Francisco Junior League. And there's about 2,000 members of the San Francisco Junior League. Now, if I was a member, paid my dues, but I never went to a meeting or occasionally showed up, but I didn't have a heavy involvement, it'd be very hard for me to develop a very strong community there, correct? Because I'm not present. But over the years, I've gotten very involved in the different things that I do within the Junior League. Last year, I was chair of our provisional education program, so I had 200 new league members that I trained for the year. I got to teach them about fundraising and volunteering and things like that. That was a pretty significant experience. And during that process, do you think I might have developed some trust and influence with those people in that community? Absolutely. A few years back, I chaired the Junior League of San Francisco Home Tour and worked with a committee on that as well. We put on a fantastic event. And that experience landed me a client that I would have never had, interestingly enough. He very, very successful businessman. They were planning on making a move, and they had another agent. But after I chaired the home tour and he saw the event that I put on, he said, you know, my wife was on your committee. We really actually liked our other agent, but after seeing what you could do with that, I know and I trust that you could do a great job. Ended up being $6 million in sales for me that from that specific client from doing a Junior League event. Pretty significant, right? This is an offline activity, but if we think about how those interactions take place online, it's very, very similar. The same things can happen because we form communities of like-minded people, but the way that we're successful is by being present. So many people think they can put their face on Twitter, or they can outsource it to their assistant to do. But can you outsource your volunteer work to your assistant? Are you going to be able to develop trust and influence with those people? Probably not. They might. They should get their real estate license. There are things that you can do if you're a very busy professional that an assistant can do, but developing trust and influence is something that you have to do because it's very personal. We all, as agents, have very similar tools, right? We have the MLS. Hopefully we have a smartphone. We've got these tools. We've got flyers. We've got this and that, computers. But the biggest reason that people hire us is because of who we are, what we know, and what our expertise is. It's our life experiences, right? And we're all very different. And it's who we are that connects us with the other people. So you have to think about being present and being involved and developing this influence. And that's where it's very much like dating, because you have to focus on building trust. And if you went on a couple of dates and then you disappeared for a year and you came back, you're not going to be in the same place, right? You have to be present. So how does this work in practical terms? How do we actually get started doing this? Well, it starts out by listening. Listening is the key to influence in any online space. It's the absolute fundamental thing that you have to do. I'm going to talk about five different tools that you can do for listening. Keep in mind, there are actually hundreds of listening tools. There's tons of them. The key element is that you are present and that you're paying attention. And so the first thing that you need to do is think about participating on the networks that you've joined. We're going to talk a little bit later about how to determine what networks you could join, because a lot of you are thinking, well, there's all of them. There's so many networks. There's Facebook and Twitter and LinkedIn and Yelp and MySpace and all of these different places. Which ones do I choose? We'll talk about that. But regardless of what social network you choose, you need to spend some time just being present in that network and paying attention to what people are saying. So for example, if it's Facebook, you're reading what people are putting on their wall. You're looking at their pictures. You're seeing what is interesting to them, what their concerns are, what information they're sharing. If you don't have friends on these social networks, they all have friend finders. And this is the Facebook one, facebook.com, find friends. LinkedIn, Twitter, they all have them. And you can connect them with your email, or you can upload a contact list if you're an Outlook user like many of us, in order to be able to find your friends or find your connections and be able to listen to them. But spend time just listening. It's the key to influence. And then you can use a tool like Google Alerts. Probably a lot of you already have this because it's very simple, it's basic, it's free. If you don't, you absolutely should. This is like the bare minimum. Many of you may have alerts set up for yourself, for your name, because we need to think about reputation management, right? We want to hear what other people are saying about us. If you're interested in that, I'm actually speaking this afternoon in my session on 102. We'll be talking about reputation management and a lot of very specific tool stuff, too. And I'll get into reputation management and how you deal with issues pretty deeply. But when we're thinking about creating Google Alerts to listen, we want to find out what people are saying in our communities that we have identified. Now, when I say community, I don't necessarily mean a geographic community. It might be. For example, my business partner, my real estate business partner, Stephen, lives in a small town called San Anselmo. It's very small. And we have Google Alerts set up for San Anselmo because anytime anything happens in San Anselmo, we want to know about it. It gives us the ability to blog about it. It gives us the ability to make sure that we're aware. We can provide information to our clients about it. So we have Google Alerts set up for the small towns. Now, if you're in a big city, say you're in Phoenix, Arizona, if you set up a Google Alert for that, you might be overwhelmed, right? Because you're going to be getting all kinds of data. So those types of searches are a little bit harder. So you have to think about what your search term might be. Now, let's say you're active in the Marin Humane Society. You might want to set up a search for that because that's also our community. So when we think about what our community is that we're trying to connect with, it may not necessarily be geographic. We have this tendency in online places to want to try and be focused and looking at our whole geographic area, but in reality, when we examine our businesses, our real businesses, where is our business coming from, we can identify that our community may be something very different. In my experience, a lot of my business has come from my volunteer work, and so when I'm in online spaces, I talk a lot about it. That's my focus area. So when you set up your Google Alert, you can put the type, everything that you want to see, how often you want to see it, once a day, as things come in, the volume you want to get, only the best or absolutely everything, and where it's going to go, your email. And the great thing about it is you put your email in. This literally, there's four steps here. The biggest step is probably figuring out what term you want to search for. And then you create your alert, and Google does its googly magic, and next thing you know, you've got an email with your results. And so this is a great way to research key terms in your area. And it's pretty easy to turn on and off, too. So if you find something's too overwhelming, you can go in, you can adjust it. If you don't have a Google account, there's so many free tools that Google offers that you absolutely should, even if you don't use it for your email. And then there's a tool called Social Mention. Social Mention is a lot like Google Alerts, but it provides, you can see up here, it provides sentiment ratings, your top keywords, it provides a passion percentage on it. Quite honestly, some of these tools provide more information than the average agent is ever going to spend a whole lot of time on. Now, if you're more of a numbers person or you're an engineer, maybe you want to analyze these numbers on these types of things. I quite honestly don't pay all that much attention to that part of it. The reason why I like Social Mention is it actually provides different information than Google Alerts does. It provides it at different times, and it also sends me a PDF in my email. So I use them both in tandem with the same exact search terms, and it will return on the same day two different types of things. Google Alerts picks up blog mentions for me very quickly. This seems to pull up other information, so I use both in tandem. Search.twitter.com is another great place to get information. For those of you who don't have a Twitter account and you're saying, I don't get Twitter, I don't care what people had for breakfast, you can still search on Twitter without having a Twitter account by doing search.twitter.com. And for those of you who think that, this afternoon I'll be talking about Twitter in great depth and how you can really reach into it and maximize it for your business. But it's actually a very great listening tool for you because you have the ability to see quick moving conversations. And on this tool, search.twitter.com, there is an advanced tool that lets you search for tweets that are by zip code. So you can search for information that's coming up in your local area. That's valuable, right? So what would be helpful for us as real estate professionals is to know what the hot issues are by the people in our area. And they're talking about them publicly. We used to have to do these expensive market research surveys and wait for an extended period of time to get the information back. And now it's publicly available because people are talking in online spaces and they're expressing their concerns. They're saying what they liked and what they didn't like. And so doing searches in some place like this that's completely open, you don't have to be connected to specific people, gives us great market research. So spend some time. Now you'll see here this particular search that I did for pound Mardi Gras. That's called a hashtag. Hashtags are affiliated with conversations that happen in online spaces. This particular hashtag is being used by this conference. So we're here in New Orleans, and NAR has set up the hashtag to be, the official hashtag is Mardi Gras. So as people are tweeting, earlier I took a picture of some people in this room, and I posted it on Twitter, and I put the hashtag on pound Mardi Gras, and if people are following the conversation by doing something like this, then they're able to keep up. So it's a great way to track conversations. So this might be one that you might want to play with. But at the end of the day, we don't want to spend all of our time talking to other real estate agents, right? We want to talk to the people in our community. So find hashtags or conversations that are happening for the communities that you're interested in, or use those key search terms. And that's a great opportunity to also find people who are in the type of community that you want to participate in. And we'll talk more this afternoon about how you find those friends in the online spaces like Twitter. Hootsuite is so awesome. I love Hootsuite. This is one of my absolute favorite tools because it does so much for me. It's like free market research. All of these tools, by the way, are free. The fantastic thing about these advances in technology is that we have so much power available to us now, and it's free. And we don't have to spend the amount of money. And not having to spend some of that money is probably a good thing for us, right? When trying to save some money. So we have all these tools that are available for free. So this is a screenshot from Hootsuite. And the great thing about Hootsuite is it lets you bring in different social networks. So I can have my Twitter. I can have my Facebook personal profile. I can have my Facebook business page for my SMMI social media. I can have my Facebook business page for my real estate team. I can pull in my LinkedIn. I can do it all in one place and do all of my listening there. Do you think that's a time saver? And the great thing about this tool is that you can set up groups of people. How many people have ever done Brian Buffini? Quite a few. Me too, do coaching. So you know that you have to A, B, C your database, right? You want to look at your priorities in your database. The A's, we want to focus most of our efforts on them. Same thing when we're looking at social networks. Because social networks can be a huge time suck. We could spend all day looking at them. Have you ever gone on for 10 minutes and next thing you know it's an hour later? Right? It's easy. It's so easy to do. And I know that you know agents in your office because they're all day long. You see, they're, what are they doing? They're on Facebook. So we need to think about paying attention to the people who are most important to our business, the people who are most likely to do business with us. And so using a tool like this enables us to prioritize them into groups. I follow 2,900 people on Twitter. Of those 2,900 people, I probably have maybe 100 of them put into slots or groups that I look at. I have a column set up for my advisory board because I want to see what they're saying. They provide valuable content. I have a whole column set up for people in my local community. I have a whole column set up for people I've met with face-to-face. So I'm able to look at those because those are the people that are the most important for my business. And that's where I focus my attention. And then if I'm bored, I have some extra time, I might look at the other parts of it, of those other 2,800 people. But I focus and read and learn from the people that are the most important first. And that's really important. The next tool that I'm going to talk about is called GIST. Now, if I've already lost some of you because you're thinking, okay, this is a lot of information, then don't even worry about this right now because it's more advanced. GIST is, quite honestly, it's a little challenging to set up. It's well worth it in the end, but when I first got in GIST, I'm really tech savvy. I pick things up pretty quick. And I went, oh, there's a lot of information here. So it can be a little overwhelming when you first set it up. But the reason why it's a cool tool is it gives us, it is market research in a free box. Really and truly it is. GIST connects with your email. So while Hootsuite is a great tool because it connects with our Facebook and our LinkedIn and all this, this brings in all of those and blog feeds and your email contacts in one spot. So let's just say that I'm contacting you, I'm placing a phone call to you, I've got you in my database, and I go and I look and see what's happening on GIST. I'm able to see that you posted on Twitter. I'm able to see that you have a new blog post. And from that information, I'm about ready to call you because we have to talk, but I know, oh, how awful, your grandmother passed away. I was supposed to follow up with you today. Do you think my phone call might be different if I knew that there was something that had happened in their lives? Absolutely. So it's the research to be able to do instead of making that phone call. Hi, you said we met at the open house. You said for me to follow up. I'm calling you today. Instead, say, hi, you know, I saw on Twitter that you had a death in your family. I'm so sorry. Let me know if there's anything I can do. Or instead of placing the phone call, you send a personal note. It can change our behavior because we have research available to us at our fingertips. Do you think that's valuable? It's huge. So it takes some time to set up, but it pulls in all of these different streams for the people that we want to connect with. And again, the power in it is that you can set up priority. So I can set up the people who are of most importance to me and pay attention to them first. So now you've spent all this time listening. At some point, we probably want to start talking to people. It's sort of hard to build trust if we're just talking to ourselves, right? So we want to invite conversation. I often have people say to me, well, I don't know what to say in online forums. Well, it's just like our day-to-day life. If we came out and we're in the common place, what do? You ask questions. Guess what? You just got 5 great listening tools. So don't you think you might be able to ask a question to start a conversation? Many people think when they first join social networks that they need to be posting something really like inspiring and insightful and new and different. And it keeps them from ever posting an update. There are times when I get it. I call it Twitter block. Probably, I would say like 1 month out of the year, I'll get Twitter block. And I go, I don't know what to say. So it's natural. But the reality is that people care more about themselves than they do about you. And they're much more interested in you if you're interested in them. The best conversationalists are the best listeners, right? I've been to events where I've had people, it's hard to imagine because I actually talk quite a bit, but where I've talked to somebody, they've talked the whole time, I asked a couple of questions, and at the end of it, they say, I really enjoy talking to you. I'm thinking, I never said anything. But they like it because it's interesting, because we're interested in them. The more interested in others you are, the more interesting you become. And that's something that really holds true in online networks as well. You know, I talked about these emails that I've been getting this week from these vendors who are saying, hey, Ginger, I heard you're speaking, and come check me out. They're not interested in me other than the fact of trying to get me to pay attention to them. Now, does that make them appealing? No. But if some of those people had said, hey, Ginger, I see you're speaking. I'm really excited about what you're talking about. I hope we get the opportunity to meet. That might have changed a little bit of the tone because they're interested in me, and it's human nature for us to like people who like us, right? As we think about posting status updates on these social networks, there's been so many times, and I know there are many of you who are guilty of this, and it's not a bad thing, but we post a picture, or we post something on Facebook, and then we refresh it until somebody has commented or done a like, right? We want somebody to pay attention. And so other people are just like that. So when you pay attention to them, they're more interested in you. And that's how you start conversations in social networks. You've listened, you've paid attention, and you're interested in them. I like to say that you have to break off your stuffy suit. And for some of you, this is harder than others. When I first wrote my first blog post, oh God, when I go back and I look at those, I think, oh, that was horrible. I was like, And now if you read I actually had somebody say to me last night, they said, you know, what I really enjoy is that I feel like I know you when you're talking online and you're exactly the same person, but I can also tell that you don't release every detail of your life. That was something that they really liked, because sometimes you have people who are bleh, like, I really don't care about that. No. Right? It's bleh. But and then you have other people who don't give you anything. And when you meet them, they're very different. And so that can be a challenge. But you need to find a way to break off the stuffy suit and be an authentic version of yourself. Now, sometimes we talk about transparency. There's a difference between transparency and authenticity, because we can be authentic and be who we are without giving every dirty detail of our lives. I have two small children. I have a 5-year-old boy and a 9-year-old girl. And they're absolutely darling. But I'm not going to show you their picture. And you'll never see their picture online. I call them thing one and thing two. I do. So sometimes I'll talk about what happens, because they do some really interesting stuff. I think, of course, I'm their mom. I'm a little biased. But I respect the fact that they don't have a choice to be online. I have a choice to provide information. They don't. And so I try and keep their information private. And when people friend me on Facebook that know my kids, I send them a message. I did this with my mom. Please do not post any photos of my children or post their names on my Facebook page, because I don't want them to be there. I have a very strict rule about that. And if somebody posts something, I instantly delete it. I monitor it very carefully. But yet, I still try and be authentic in online spaces, because we want to do business with people we like and who are like us. Remember, we just talked about this. Our single biggest differentiating factor we have is who we are, what we're like, what we know. And so when we get people in our car that are like-minded, those people are a heck of a lot easier to deal with, right? Have you ever had those clients that you pick up? I had a client that I worked with maybe 2 years ago, and it was a sign call, and listed the house. Beautiful, beautiful house. The transaction was the biggest nightmare I'd ever had. The guy was very disrespectful. Interestingly enough, he taught, he ran some sort of business where he taught women how to be empowered. I couldn't figure it out, because in my transaction, nothing I said was right. At all. He ended up hiring a male who sold his house later after I fired him, because he didn't trust anything I had to say. And I should have known it from the get-go, but we've all had those experiences with various people who are not like us. We can't think the same. It's not necessarily anything bad with them. You have some people who only work with engineers because that's how they work, and other people who couldn't work with an engineer to save their life because they can't handle the detail that may be involved with it. So when you're thinking about how you participate in online spaces, a lot of people will say, well, how much information is personal versus private? Anybody wondering that? The answer is 63%. No, I'm kidding. Don't write it down. I'm totally kidding. I can't answer that question, because the reality is we're all different, right? And so you have people who come into your offices and they're in their suits every day, and they would not imagine showing a client to a house without wearing their suit. And then you have other agents who come in their office and they're wearing Birkenstocks and shorts, and they've never seen a suit a day in their life, right? So we're all very different, and they both could be tremendously successful. You could have agent number one and agent number two, top agents in your community, And they're very, very different. And that persona that you carry with your clients offline really should be continued online. So if you're very strict in your online business and you are buttoned up, you may find your presence is more like that. You may be lean much more towards professional, talking about statistics or whatever it may be. But if you're the type of person in your business who becomes very friendly with your clients, I know that I'm probably kind of a weird sort of balance, because I can make an Excel spreadsheet for anything. But when I'm showing clients, by the end of my transactions, they become my friends. And I get invited to their birthday parties, and I've gotten invited to weddings, and I really become part of what's happening with them. And so when I'm participating in online spaces, I have that same persona, because I like to hug people, and I want us to be friends, and that's how I work. But Dan Green is a member of our advisory board, and he runs a mortgage blog. He's Mortgage Reports on Twitter. Dan, you'll see him around the suit. You'll see him around the conference, and he is as suited up as you can get. The first time I ever saw him without a suit, I didn't recognize him, because he's always in a suit, and his online presence is very much like that. Once I got to know him outside of a business environment, I found that he actually is a really, really, he's a funny guy and very different than this online persona, but he has a way that he deals with his clients in his office and online, and that's how he is. And you'll always see him in a suit, and his avatar is a suit, and that's what works best for him. And he ends up, he talks about mortgages all day long, and he's become very successful as a blogger. He's now regularly featured on financial shows, on TV shows, CNBC and the like, because he's presented himself as the authority or the expert, and that's his place. But there are other people who do just as well being very different and casual. So think about what's comfortable for you, and that's the right percentage. It's not 63%. So you think about now, what are you going to do? Next step is to provide value. You've listened, you've engaged in conversations. Now we want to provide value. Think about dating. It's the small gifts sometimes that are the most important, right? So how does this actually work? Well, first of all, being helpful is always good. Answering questions is a good way to provide value. When I say provide value, I'm not expecting you to give them a refrigerator. We don't have the budgets for that. We can provide a lot of value with information without it ever costing us a dime, and that helps us create trust. Sharing information is incredibly valuable, because guess what? You've just spent all this time listening, and you know what their problems are, right? And you might have information that could help them solve that problem. And people, like we talked about, care about themselves more than they care about you. And so if you're putting information out there that you care about, and it's not relevant to them, they're just not going to pay attention. But if they're thinking about, how is my family going to be better? How am I going to be able to do this? And you provide them information that helps them, you become much more interesting. So that's a good thing. And then the third way that you can provide value, which I think is such a natural fit for us and is really what we do all day long, is to connect people with other people. Real estate agents are the biggest resource for information in our communities, because we know the architects, we know the plumbers, we know the engineers, we know the financial planners, the insurance agents. We have to deal with every part of people's lives. We know the divorce attorney. We know the mediators. We know everyone. Aaron Strout is the chief marketing officer for a company called Powered, which is out of Austin, Texas, and he sits on our advisory board for the Social Media Marketing Institute. And very successful, incredibly funny online, but the cornerstone of his success has been being a connector, which is probably, I'm guessing, how I met him. He has connected me with so many other people, because what he does is he says, hi, I like you. We know each other. Oh, I like you too. We know each other. Guess what? You could help you. I'm going to put you together. And in that process, what happens? He develops social capital with these people. He develops a good feeling because he's helped them. They would not have met each other before. They can solve each other's problems. And that puts him in a good position. So we have the ability to do that. We connect people all day long. And that's a great way to provide value in online spaces as you meet people, is to be able to connect them with the resources and the people that they need. This whole process is about building trust. And notice that these are blocks. They're building blocks, because trust doesn't happen overnight. And this is something you're probably going to hear me say maybe two or three more times, because there's so many people out there thinking that they can get on social networks and have get rich quick, and it's not going to happen. It doesn't. When a new agent starts in the business, anytime a new agent has ever started in the business, I say it's going to take you time. You're not going to be the top agent overnight, right? Because it takes us time to build our networks. We have to work hard, and eventually it works. So you have to take the time to build trust, just like in dating, and demonstrate your expertise. And that doesn't mean saying I'm number one, because people don't care about you. They care about themselves. They want you to show them expertise. Show me the money, right? Show me the money. What do you know? I don't care that you're the number one expert. I want to know what it is that you can do that can help me. This is a challenging thing to do in some online spaces, because in some instances we have 140 characters. Twitter, right? How do you demonstrate expertise on Twitter in 140 characters? It's not so easy. I personally think that the absolute best place to demonstrate expertise is a blog. And some of you are going to go, oh, dang, she mentioned that B word, the blog. It's a lot of work, right? Yeah, I can see, yeah. Oh, I don't want to blog. I don't know what to say. Twitter, Facebook, these things are a great way to start those conversations. We can engage in conversation. We can start the process of building trust. We like each other. Just because we like each other doesn't mean I'm going to buy a house from you, right? But if you have trust plus demonstrated expertise, you have an influence. And this can be significant to our pocketbooks. Because people want to do business with people they like and that they trust, but they want to know that you can actually do your job. And telling them you can do your job and showing them are two totally different things. It used to be that we were the gatekeepers of information, and that's why people came to real estate agents. They could not get access to listings without us. Now, most of my clients will call me and say, I've been watching, I got the email alert, there's a new listing. They know about listings oftentimes before we do. There's so many tools out there. Our listings are on hundreds, if not thousands, of websites. So being a gatekeeper is no longer something that works. And we're fearful of releasing too much information for fear that people might not want to hire us. But it doesn't work that way, because our job is tough. I was on an expert panel yesterday with a man named Richard Silver, who has a blog called Torontoism. He's in Toronto. He's incoming president of their board there. And Richard has developed a huge base of business from his blog. And he said that one of his best posts that he did killed his broker. His broker actually hated it when he wrote it, was how to sell your home yourself. And when his broker read the title, he's like, Richard, what are you doing? And then when he laid out all of the steps that he did to sell his clients' homes, by the end of it, people are thinking, no way would I ever sell my house myself. That's a lot of work. So when we think about how do we demonstrate expertise, do we be gatekeepers? We don't want to be gatekeepers anymore. We want to release the information because people can find it anyway. Be the source instead of being the gatekeeper. Information is at everybody's fingertips, and the people they trust are the people who are providing the information and being the resource. So think about that. I like to put online relationships somewhat like a farm. It's like an online relationship form. You have to plant the seeds. It's not like Farmville, where you like to turn it on and then overnight you've got a farm and you've got crops and you've got to harvest them, right? It doesn't work that way. You have to plant them. You have to water them. You have to nurture them. You have to fertilize them. And eventually, over time, you get to harvest it. But it's not going to happen overnight. And if any of you have ever done a direct mail farm, it's very much the same way. You could put out one postcard and you might get lucky and get somebody to call you and list their house, but most likely if you're doing that direct mail farm, it's going to take you a year, 2 years to get that to work. Now, in social networks, it's not going to take you that long in general, but you still have to take the process. There's a process involved with it. Okay? So we've spent some time talking about listening, engaging in conversation and all of these things, and a lot of you are probably going, when is she going to talk about the specific tools? And this afternoon in my 102 session, I go really, really much more in depth with tools. I talk about Facebook, Twitter, blogging. I talk about reputation management. The reason why I'm not talking about the tools as much right now is because tools are changing constantly. Facebook changes every other day, it seems like. Every time I go on, there's a new alert that says something has changed. We have to keep up with those changes. But regardless, it doesn't matter what the tool is. If you know how to participate and engage correctly as the tools change, you can find the tool that's right for you. So there are four steps to effective social media use. And the first one is about the people. We have this tendency when we get on social networks that we want to reach every single person we can, right? There's all these people there. I got to get to know them all. Well, the reality is they're not all going to buy a house from you. They aren't. And we have to think about being the big fish in a small pond. We have a tendency to want to be in the big pond. We want to play with the big boys, right? We want to be in this big pond. But the reality is that we're going to have a very hard time developing influence. When we think about influence, if we have a community of 10 people who know us and they really like us and trust us, those are our A's in our database, right? Or we have a community of 100 people and none of them know us, having a larger community, is that helpful? No. Having a really strong group of A's is much more helpful. So we need to identify who those people are. Because if we don't know who they are and we go on social networks, that's where we waste our time. That is the time suck. If you don't know who you're trying to reach, and that's where listening is important and paying attention. So who is your target market? Who are the people most likely to buy from you? Who do you want to work with? Because we don't want to work with those people that suck all of our energy, right? So focus on those. And some of you are thinking, I want to do business with everybody. I'm afraid I might lose deals. I need business. I don't want to lose any deals. You'll get the other deals anyway. They'll come to you naturally. Focus your efforts on one specific group or two groups, whatever it may be. But focus, because that way you know what you're trying to do. Because the next thing that you want to do is identify your objectives. Because if you go online and we rush online and we go to Facebook and Twitter and we don't know why we're there, what's the point? Time suck. Biggest complaint I hear about social networking is it sucks away all of our time, and that's because we're not focusing on who we're trying to reach or what we want them to do. So the question is, what needs to be improved in your business? Do you have areas that are inefficient? Do you need more buyers or sellers? Is there certain things that are just not working quite right for you? What's your goal? Because if you know what your goal is, then you're going to be able to reach those people easier. You can see here, there's this tendency to start using all these cool tools, but what we really need is a strategy. Because we need to figure out what we're going to do next. We need to figure out the action steps. So we know the people, we know what we're trying to do, so now we can work on a strategy to try and reach those people. Does that make sense? It's a lot easier to figure out the right actions that aren't going to waste our time if we have a strategy in place. And then at this point, we can think about tools. Now's the time to think about tools. Because we know who we're trying to reach, and we can then look for the tool that would be appropriate to reach them. Because if you've decided you're spending all of your time on Facebook, and in reality, all of the people that you want to reach are participating in a discussion group on LinkedIn, is that going to be beneficial to you? No. So we can't pick what tool is going to be helpful in our business until we know who we want to reach and where they're at. Does that make sense to you? This is a really important thing to do because we have this tendency to want to put all of the tools in place. But we don't have time for all of them. There's no way we can possibly have time for all of the tools. So we need to identify our efforts and figure out where the people who are most likely to do business with us that we want to do business, because at the end of the day, if we don't enjoy it, it's not going to be fun. And then we can pick the tool. Social media does not work in a silo. It doesn't work by itself. And we see this happen all the time. All right, I'm ready. I think I'm going to try this. People are saying I have to be on these social networks. 500 million people are on Facebook. I guess I better be there. I'm going to test it out. Sort of like saying, this email thing. I might want to try email, but I'm not going to do anything with it with any of the people I already know. I'm just going to keep it over here. Is it going to work? No. Social networks are a channel to communicate with all of the other people that you're doing in your business. So you can't separate it. It has to be integrated. It has to be into your overall plan. The people that you're trying to reach, the people online and offline. You know, the people that are online are actually real people. And we at some point probably want to get them offline. And so you have to figure out how to make that all happen. So you have to integrate your offline activities that you're doing with your online. And this is sometimes a challenge because we're testing things out in this online vertical without thinking about how we bring it all together in a practical sense. An effective social media plan includes both online and offline tools. How are they going to work together? So for the rest of our time, what I'd like to talk about is how that works in a practical sense. Because we go, okay, that sounds good, but how does this really work in a real agent's business? Well, you spend all this time thinking and listening and developing your plan. You know who you're going to reach, right? Because you've got your people, you've got your objective, you've got your strategy, and you identify your tool. And for the sake of this, I'm not saying this is the best tool. For the sake of this discussion, let's say that you've decided that you're going to participate on Facebook and LinkedIn. Those are your two tools that will work for the people that you've identified in your network. You want to integrate those profiles into your email signature. And this sounds so basic, yet when I look at the emails that I get from lots of social media experts, 90% of them don't have it in there. Make it easy for the people you communicate with on a regular basis to be able to connect with you in your social networks. Okay? Now, I put my blog in here, and I will tell you that I get a ton of traffic on my blog from my email. Interesting, right? I've had people say, oh, I was on your blog, I didn't know you had one until you sent me that email. And it drives them there, and guess what? Those are the people that we know offline who already might even know us and like us, because we've developed that offline. They see what we're doing online because we are demonstrating our expertise, we're sharing information, and where do those intersect? Influence. Possible clients, right? Is that powerful? I can't tell you how many clients I've worked with that I knew offline that saw my blog, solidified the deal. Oftentimes, it is the deal sealer. I had a client who called me. I ended up selling them two houses. But she was referred to me by somebody I sold a house with. So she started out as a referral. But she didn't call me right away. Because guess what? She knows 47 other real estate agents. She said, when I was referred to you, I was like, yeah, that's great. I know they liked her. But I also knew all these other real estate agents. But then one day I went on your website, your blog, and you were talking about my community. And I knew that you knew my neighborhood. You knew what was happening in the market. You knew the market reports. You knew what the cool things in that community were. And I knew that those other agents I was talking to didn't have that kind of expertise. I saw it on your blog, and that's why I called you. I knew that they had a good experience with you, but it was your blog that sealed the deal. That's how it works together. That's how it integrates together. So make it easy for people to find you. It's very simple. So how do you get those links into it? Well, it depends on what email you use. So I'm going to give you two tools, but remember, it depends. This is a tool called WiseStamp. WiseStamp, it works if you're on a web-based email system like Google or Yahoo. What it is a browser plugin, and it works on the Firefox browser, it works on Chrome, I believe it works on Safari, it does not work on Internet Explorer. If you guys are still on Internet Explorer, I know some of your MLSs require it, use it for MLS, use a different browser for everything else, you'll find your life is so much better. Seriously, I'm not kidding. So WiseStamp will work with web-based email. If you're on Outlook, which probably a good percentage of you are on Outlook, right? You can edit your custom signature, and there's two ways you can do it. You can use a program called RETagger, retagger.com, address is down here, and they actually will create like a whole page that has your social profile. For many of you, it may be more information that you need, but they'll create a little email signature that you can put in the bottom. I don't recommend your picture in your email. I should have wiped that out. I don't like that, personally. When I get somebody's picture, what does that email seem like? It's about you, right? We want our emails to be about them because they care more about themselves than they care about you. That's my personal opinion. My business partner would disagree with you because he's got his big fat picture in there and it's also from 1970. He needs to dump it. I'm not kidding. What is the deal with that? He's got like a broomstick mustache and he had more hair, but it didn't need to be on his face. So you can do it in something like this. You can also edit your signature and just put in a small little image if you wanted to have images, or just put links in. Put a link. Here's my blog. Here's my Facebook. Here's my Twitter account. Now, when you do that, you have to decide if you really want these people to contact you there. So in my email signature, back here, where it says Facebook, that goes to my Facebook business page. It does not go to my personal profile because I don't want everybody I email to contact me on my personal profile. I'm selective about it. If you don't want them, I actually will delete certain ones of these on emails that I send because that automatically pops in and I delete it if I don't want them in there. So think about that. Not that they couldn't find me on every social network out there, but make it easy for them, but pick what you want. If you don't want them to see, if you have the blue and the pink dots together, that's for Flickr, that's where my photography is held. If you don't want them to see your photography, maybe you wouldn't want to put it on there. So think about that as you're putting your information out there. But make it easy for people to find you. If you have an email newsletter, how many people in here are using email to send information to their clients now? Quite a few of you. Yeah, it's a lot cheaper, right? It's a lot cheaper. This is actually an email newsletter. Andy Kaufman is sitting over here, and this is his. He works in Berkeley, California. And you can see that he's got over on the side, his Facebook, his Twitter, and the orange icon is for RSS feed, which is for people to get feeds into their reader, their Google Reader, which I'm not going to talk too much about now because I don't want your eyes to glaze over. But what he's done here is he has people who sign up for his email newsletter. He puts stats on his blog, and they can sign up and receive those. They're opting in, permission marketing, and they can get those. But that doesn't necessarily always drive a lot of conversation. For those of you who think that when you write a blog you're going to get 47,000 comments, guess what? You get a lot of readers. You don't get as many comments. People comment much more often on Facebook and Twitter. Especially now, where any sort of trend to write on blogs seems to have changed in terms of comments. The conversations are happening on social networks, so make it easy for them to have a conversation with you on a social network. Because I may not email you back. I may not email Andy back based on this information, but if I go on to Twitter and I see he's having a conversation about what's happening in the REO market, he's an REO agent, then I might strike up a conversation with him because it's sort of low invasion. An email seems like much more context. So I might be more likely to engage with him in a social network. So make it easy for them if you're doing that kind of thing. Print marketing is not necessarily dead, despite what we may hear. Print marketing can still be very, very effective. This is an example of an advertisement that was placed in the newspaper by Heather Elias. She's an agent in Loudoun County, Virginia. She has a great blog, locomusings.com. And at the end of this presentation, by the way, there's a URL. It's not live yet, but it's going to have links to all of the different websites that I've mentioned. So you can go on if you're going, what did they do? What was good? What was bad? Check in with that link tomorrow. It'll be live, but I'll post all of these on there. So she did this ad, and she wanted to test it because she's got a great blog. She wanted to see what kind of traffic a print ad would do in her newspaper. For the 3 days after this ad went out, her blog traffic spiked up. And guess what? Those visitors that are visiting it are highly targeted because they knew exactly what they were getting based on this ad when they got there, right? So they're not going to be like a typical search engine that's like, oh, that wasn't exactly what I wanted, off I go, and there's not any time spent on the page. There's tremendous time spent on the page because there's an interest in the content. And so she's developed this now as a regular process by doing print advertising. How many of you do open houses? Yeah. Open houses can be very effective. There's six of us total, five other than myself. And we recently launched a new website, so we've been using for open houses this card here that we hand out. And you can see it looks just like our website. It's got our website address and our required DRE information on the back. And inside, it's got a picture of the homepage of our site. And it says, meet our new website. And it says what people are going to get. Marin Real Estate, neighborhoods, people, culture, communities. When people come to our open houses, oftentimes they don't really want to talk to us, right? It's like, oh, she's a real estate agent, I'm going into the bedroom, quick, run, right? Right? No, they're not necessarily there giving you their permission to talk to you. They might have a need, they might want to buy or sell a house, but they haven't necessarily decided they're comfortable with you because they don't know you, they don't like you, they don't trust you yet. But if you give them something like this, they might go on your site, get more information. You've demonstrated your expertise there, and guess what? That may be the quicker, right there. They met you offline. They're in your open house. Demonstrate expertise on your site or on your Facebook page or whatever it may be. It doesn't have to be this fancy. We went fancy on this. We're really excited about our new site. Our sites, we've had the Blog by the Bay for years, and we finally went and really did a lot with this site. And we also work in a luxury market. You know, our average home price is over $1 million, so it's a little bit different than a lot of places. You could do something as simple as putting it on a tiny little card. There's a company called Moo Cards that prints up cute little cards. You can do, like, it looks like a full-size business card, or you can do half. My first cards that I gave out at open houses were on Moo Cards, and they're very inexpensive, and you could do a quick little picture and then put visit my website or visit my Facebook page. Make it easy for them to contact you in a forum where they might feel more comfortable. Does that make sense? So that's how you could integrate that. If you have a traditional farm that you work, or you're known as the expert in a specific community, you could create a Facebook page for that. And here's an example of one that I found, Inverness Park Neighborhood in San Ramon, California. And he has posted information. He organized a community garage sale. He posted that information. He had all kinds of different things. He's got discussions that happen. He's got people post things for sale on there. He's created some really good conversations. You can't see how many friends here he has or likes on this page. I'm thinking the number, if I'm correct, it's not high. It's not like it's thousands. It might be in the hundreds, 200s type thing. But guess what? Small niche community, like we talked about, right? And that can be incredibly powerful. So if you already have an offline network that's like that, think about generating an online community where there can be more discussion. Because our print marketing, it's hard to generate discussion, right? But we can still use it to bring it online. I like to say that whatever is online needs to go offline, and whatever is offline needs to go online, because we have the ability to demonstrate trust and expertise. We need to, as we're participating online, we need to think about getting people offline, because if they always stay in your computer, it's going to be really hard to get them in your car, right? So throughout today, we've talked a lot about time as well and where your time sucks can come in. Other than fear of technology, not having enough time is one of the biggest things that we hear about. Remember that it is easy to get sucked into these social networks, into the Facebooks and into the Twitter, if you don't know who you're trying to reach. So you have to know who you're going to and focus your efforts. And then we need to think about what things in our business are ineffective. I guarantee you, if you identified your day, put time frames next to it, you're going to find time in your day where you're not effective. There are things that you're doing that you absolutely hate, and guess what? They're costing you time and they're costing you money because you're not having the ability to do other things. I had an agent in my office say to me, Ginger, there is no way I could ever write a blog. I don't have enough time. And every single time I walked past her desk, she was playing solitaire. Every single time. I'm thinking, how? That's like talking to yourself. Are you going to develop trust and influence in new clients by doing that? Absolutely not. We had an agent in a class that we taught about 2 years ago who said that she spent a lot of time playing, it's a bingo, I think. And what we were able to identify is she could actually play bingo with other people in social networks. So while we discount a lot of those applications that come in, Mafia Wars, things like that, some of us don't want to see them, I don't want to see them, I hide them from my Facebook page, some of those games that seem to be time wasters could potentially be opportunities for us to connect, too, if it's something you really enjoy. But you have to be careful of your time. Find those times in your day where you're not doing something that is effective. Some of our biggest time frames that are ineffective are open houses where we have nobody there, right? Have you ever sat in an open house where nobody comes for 3 hours? That is the worst, especially when you know that your favorite football team's playing and there's no TV, right? Or whatever it may be, you're sitting there and that you dread them. You dread doing your open houses. Make your open houses productive. Make sure you have the right tools in your tool belt to make your time more productive, because those times can be effective, whether it's a smartphone, whether it's a laptop enabled with wireless internet, or whether it's an iPad, whatever the tool is. Open houses are a great time to do social networking, so are grocery store lines. Don't do it in the car unless you're sitting. But how many times have you had to show a house and you're waiting for 30 minutes for somebody to show up? In 30 minutes, how many people's photos on Facebook could you comment on? Seriously, And guess what? That makes them happy, right? Because we care. We like it when other people like our stuff. So think about all the time that we waste waiting for other people, waiting for inspectors. We wait. We spend a lot of time waiting. We have a lot to do. And whether it's social networking or whether you're taking care of your email during that period of time or you're doing other tasks that enable you to find more time to do some of these things that we can do online. Now I'm going to open it up. We have a few minutes, and I'm going to open it up if you have any questions about this process, how this process works. I want to remind you that this afternoon, if you're looking for more information on tools, I'll be talking about reputation management, what happens if somebody says something, and why you need to be there. And I'm going to talk about blogging, Facebook, Twitter, and do's and don'ts, best practices for each of the different social networks. So that's at 2:30, and I believe it's here in the same room, but you might want to confirm your schedule. The other thing Todd had mentioned is that we just relaunched the ePro, and that has my partner who helped write it just came in here, Bill Loveland. And if you are interested in that, we rewrote it from the ground up. We're really excited about it, and ask your association to see that. I don't see anybody coming up for questions, so I'm going to go ahead and end it, but you're feel free to come back up here. You had a question? Yes. For like Facebook and Twitter and things like that? Yes. So the question was, is there iPhone apps for it? Many of the social networking tools have applications for not only the iPhone, but the Droid, for the BlackBerry, for, trying to think of the other tools that I'm spacing, the iPhone. Most of them have a Facebook app, a Twitter app, a LinkedIn app that can make you much more efficient. So Facebook has its own app, LinkedIn has its own app, Twitter is the Twitter app, so you can just go directly to them and find their mobile apps, or you can go to the app store for the iPhone and just search for them. There's a ton of different ones. Okay, any other questions? I'm going to talk about blogging a lot more this afternoon. Hard to answer in a quick question. Are you looking for a platform or? I'm sorry? If you're just starting out, I would recommend you look at WordPress.com. Yep, and we'll talk about why this afternoon. Okay, any other questions?
Did you say you were going to give us a link?
Oh, yep. Oh, it didn't show up. You know, it's at the back of your handout. The reason why the Tiffany box up here, it's not about quantity, it's about the quality, right? Okay, thank you so much, everyone. Have a great time. Enjoy your experience.